it seems, to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you doing this week? It's great to talk to you again. It's been a while, but boy, we have a really exciting talk coming up. We get into it. It's a conversation with Hilde and Charlie Mueller from Laughing Tree Bakery in Michigan. They're really nice folks, and we hit it off, and I kind of forgot that the mics were on after a while, and we were just talking. I'm so happy with this conversation and the way it turned out. And I can't wait to share it with you in a couple of minutes' time. Before then, what should we talk about? Spring has sprung here on the west coast of Canada. I actually put plants in the garden yesterday. Yeah, Cindy and I went to the garden center, bought new planter boxes for our balcony here on the apartment. They are smaller than last year's setup, but they're a little more attractive, and our balcony isn't very big. And so I was tripping a lot and not going out there as much as I would like to, because I'd like to be amongst the vegetables more often. So we bought these smaller planter boxes and got everything transferred into them, and I bought some bedding plants and put them in. So I'm going to just shift my gaze a little bit, and I'm going to describe the pea plants that are in the ground. The lettuce starts that are in the ground, a couple marigolds that will hopefully keep the aphids off the tomatoes, and two tomato plants, which it's kind of too early for the tomatoes, but I'll take good care of them, and they can work on the roots for the next month or so and then shoot up. So I'm excited about the garden. I don't know why, like every spring, it's just sunshine and warmth and growth, I guess, but I do love planting a few vegetables, that's for sure. And so even though I have just three tiny little planter boxes, it brings me disproportionate amounts of joy to see stuff growing in there and being healthy, and especially things that I can eat. So yeah, so that's going on. Other than that, I am working a ton at the coffee shop. I am learning a lot about just how busy a small coffee shop can get when you're in a tourist town and the weather is nice. But we've been really busy. So my shoulders are bulky and large and impressive looking. The rest of me isn't, but my shoulders really are. And also my forearms from grating butter. Did you guys ever see the it was a Far Side comic long, long time ago? Because there used to be a game, an arcade game that was a golf game that had a rollerball. I think it was called the Golden Tee. And you played this game by hitting the rollerball as fast as you could and as hard as you could. And that was how far the ball went in the golf game. And if you went straight on the rollerball, then the ball went straight. But if you were at an angle, the ball went at an angle. Anyways, this comic had a guy that was like the Golden Tee champion. And he was just this, you know, dweeby looking guy, not too unlike me, but he had a massive arm, one massive arm, because he could roll that rollerball. And that's what my left arm feels like after grating pound after pound of butter for the scones and grating pound after pound of carrots for the carrot cake. I have a very, very strong left arm and two bulky shoulders, and the rest of me is kind of the same. But yeah, so if you see me walking with a bit of a lurch down the street, say hi. What else is happening? I'm just blathering because I'm in a happy mood because it's springtime. I've mentioned over the past couple of weeks, a few times, the Baking Association of Canada's Big Bakery Showcase is coming up in Vancouver on May 14th and 15th. I'm going to be there, and I'm going to be giving a talk actually on Sunday the 14th, which is I'm excited about. I was terrified of, and now I'm excited about it because I'm getting the talk wrapped up. I hope you come to this. If you're in Western Canada, Northwestern US, anywhere really that you want to come to Vancouver, because it's a beautiful city, come to the Baking Association thing. It's going to be great fun. It's going to be my first time there, so I'm excited about it. They're having a pizza expo in addition to the bakery showcase, sort of side by each. So there's pizza stuff, and there's got to be samples, right? Like if it's a pizza expo and they aren't handing out pizza, I don't know. So I don't know that this is going to happen, but I suspect it will. So yeah, so come out to Vancouver. Maybe there will be free samples, demos, talks, my talk. It's not the only talk. There's going to be good ones too. Come to all of it. And if you see me there, please say hi. Stop and say hi. Because other than me giving a talk on one day and hosting a panel on the next day, I'm just going to be hanging out and trying to meet people and say hi to folks. So come say hi. See the sights. Vancouver's lovely this time of year. It's lovely all the time. What else? So let's get into the talk. I'm not going to talk this week about supporting the show by going to riseuppod.com, click the support the show button, leave a small donation. It's very much appreciated when you do. Helps me pay for the cost of running the show. Not going to mention it this week. I'm not going to talk about Bakers for Bakers, even though it exists and it's awesome. And we had an amazing talk on leadership last week. Oh my God. It was one of the most heartfelt, let's get right to the thick of it conversations that we've ever had on our Baker Roundtable calls. It was about leadership and staffing and working with employees. It was so good. Not going to talk about it though. Bakers for Bakers. That's the number four. Bakersforbakers.org. It's free. Sign up. Not going to talk about it because I want to save the most time for this chat with Hildy and Charlie. So Hildy and Charlie Mueller live somewhere in an undisclosed location, deep, deep in the woods in mid-state in Michigan. They bake and they bake and they bake at their farm, and then they take all their baking around the area on the Lake Michigan side of the state. They take it down to Muskegon, which looks like a really cool city when I was Google mapping it. Well worth checking out. They take it to the farmer's market there. They've been doing it for like 14 years. And they have really literally hacked a life and out of the woods in upstate Michigan. It's a really interesting story. And we get into it. We talk about the building out. We talk about our common ancestor in baking and in life, Alan Scott. We also talk about dreams and visions and the future and what's next and all of it. And it's just such a fun conversation. Can't wait to share it with you. It's Hildy and Charlie Mueller from Laughing Tree Bakery, somewhere in the wilds of Michigan. Oh, so you've heard the show, have you?
Oh, yeah. Lots
of times. Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, you really, I really enjoy it. I think, you know, the service you provide, being one, a great storyteller, is something that we just really need in society today. I mean, we've always needed it, right? But more now probably than ever. And then just being able to hear other people's stories and, you know, what they've done or what they're doing has given us pause, and just it's, you know, there's a lot of good information out there. So thank you for being the conduit for all of us to share it with each other.
Oh, you betcha. Yeah, no, my pleasure. My pleasure. Yeah. All. And it's like, it's those connections between different bakers that still blow my mind, right? Because everybody I talk to says, oh, you should talk to these folks. Mm-hmm. And then I go, oh, who's that? And then I start looking around and it's like, oh, wow. You know, like,
yeah.
Well, like you two, for example, it's so funny. I got up early this morning and kind of reading about you folks, and I did it completely reversed in my research this morning, because I saw a line where he says, we're at the Muskegon Farmer's Market. I said, okay. So I look up Muskegon and I'm looking at that. I said, oh, that channel to the lake, that's got to be man-made. And then I start checking out ferry schedules across, and I said, oh,
hold on. It's almost eight. I gotta talk to them. So I look up Hart and I said, well, that's 40 miles up the road. It's like, oh, what am I even looking at Muskegon for? Because it just about moved there, you know? And then I was like, okay, so I'm checking out Hart. And then it was like, oh, well, hold on. But I know you guys live outside of there. So I look and it's like, well, you're off in the woods as well. So I as if I were driving to your place, I started big and then kept taking a smaller road and a smaller road. Then I saw the little loop at the end and I said, that's your place. So yeah.
And eventually the road can't get any smaller and you get to our spot.
That's right.
Way out in the sticks.
That's right. Eh?
But we live in the bat cave.
Yeah.
In an undisclosed location.
That's right. Yeah. Don't go looking for it. Just enjoy the bread, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's so funny. People, I mean, over the years we've had different articles and all done about us, and then inadvertently I'll find somebody out on the road. I'll be out on a walk and some car will pull up next to me and be like, hey, do you know where the bakery is? No, I don't.
Oh yeah.
It's a paradox. We want to promote our products, but not where we bake them.
Well, totally. Well, and it sounds like a bit of a magical setup. You're like right in the woods in Michigan, eh? Like that's sort of midway in the state there and just doing your thing. Are you still doing like the brick oven? Right from day one still to now, eh?
I had the really privilege of working with Alan out in California in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And it was really quite a, you know, you talk about bakers having stories and running in similar circles. I had my interest in baking really started in the mid 90s. I had come back. I was in the Peace Corps in Mali in West Africa. And I had come back and really became super interested in like small scale agriculture because it was all around us, of course, all the time in West Africa.
Right.
And so I wound up on this little farm in West Virginia for a while, and they had all kinds of like baking books, including Laurel's Kitchen bread book.
Right.
And it was all kind of like this bread baking seemed like alchemy to me. It was just seemed like this, you know, magic process that was a grand mystery. Some days it still is, right? Mm-hmm. So in the back of the book, I had taken note that there was this guy, Alan Scott, in California, who knew Laurel and, you know, was building ovens for her. And I thought, that seems kind of curious. I'll write him a letter. So I wrote Alan, never heard back from him. And just the next year or two, I decided, well, I had this VW bus and I got in it with a couple of friends and we just drove out
to
California from Michigan called Alan from the road. He was like, hey, we're here. And he's like, who are you? And I said, I'm going to build ovens with you, man. And we arrived.
Poor Alan.
We arrived at his place. And, you know, it's Mark, there has been so many magical instances that have happened around bread in these particular ovens. Mm. In fact, just to back up for just a second, on the way out to California, we had gone there via the UP in Michigan.
Okay.
Roundabout way.
Yep.
And a friend of a friend knew a couple, Jan Shireman and Gerard Gabrowski, who owned the Pleasanton Brick Oven Bakery. And they had just built, well, they had been doing it for a number of years, actually, but they had built a little bakery in their backyard and they had one of Alan's ovens. And I was like, wow, this is kind of weird and serendipitous and all that jazz. But it was like the most magical thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I stepped into that bakery and I was like, wow, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And I just got bit by the bug. Anyway, long story short, wind up out at Alan's. And the day we arrive, so I walk into the backyard. And Alan, you know, had invited us over after, you know, our phone conversation. And who's there baking with him? But like two guys, this guy who is from France, whom I never saw again, and Chad Robertson, who had just come back from like France with Liz. And they were waiting for like permits to build their oven down in Point Reyes. So anyway, you know, I got to know those guys and then eventually met Dave Miller and then wound up working back in Wisconsin for about a year with a guy by the name of Jeff Ford, who owns the Crest Spring Bakery outside of Madison, and really learned a lot from Jeff, who's like a magician with whole grains, and was really, I feel like, was at the forefront of sourcing local grains from farmers. I can't remember from where he was getting them. Maybe it was Minnesota, but he was baking with Coruscant flour at the time and spelt. And this was like 96, something like that. So, you know, it seems like a bazillion years ago. But if I think of those folks and what Alan brought to, he really was like you in some regard. He was this epicenter for all of these bakers who were doing kind of these new things. And he just, you know, all of a sudden it just took off from there. So it was really cool. It was a magical time of my life. And I really appreciated all the people that I met. And, you know, I feel like we're all beyond wealthy, maybe not from the profits we derive from our operations, but from the experiences that we've had. And then in turn, what, you know, we try to bring to our community.
Alan is a bit of a storyteller because.
And he was, man, he was, yeah. He used to regale us. He used to regale us with stories of sailing around like the Mediterranean. And I can't remember, is it the Red Sea that is, or is it the Black Sea that's like right along the coast of Somalia? But he was a sailor.
Oh, and wow. He, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was. He sailed all around Europe and Africa. And he had these beautiful pen and ink drawings that he would show us that he had done of these buildings that he saw in people's clothing. I mean, he was such a talented, open-hearted, and generous human being.
What a life. My goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. What a life indeed. Anyway, that's kind of the best. So we're here in the shticks.
Yeah.
We kind of, Hildy and I met in early 2000s, and Hildy's got her own story of how she came into kind of the baking.
Well that's scene. That was one of my questions was, were you already bakers before you met? And it sounds like maybe you were.
Well, it's sort of, I mean, it's funny to hear Charlie tell all of that because I was like in middle school when he was.
I
wasn't even old enough to go along.
I'm ancient man.
No, so we met, the first time Charlie and I met was actually my senior year of college. I was home on spring break. Charlie was actually running the Ypsilanti, what was it, this cooperative bakery, Depot Town Cooperative Bakery at that time, and which was in Ypsilanti, which was my hometown.
Okay.
And I was finishing a degree in English literature, and I just knew that I wanted to bake. I had very limited baking experience, but I was so drawn to it. And so a woman that I knew who was kind of a mutual friend and is actually now our sister-in-law, she was working at the co-op next to the bakery Charlie was running. And she said, you should go in there and see if you can get a job working with Charlie. So the first time we met, I was coming into the bakery hoping for employment. He did not hire me.
Bad person, Mark. What did I know, though?
It was actually, I was only going to be around for a few months, and then I was going to be leaving the country for a time.
So tell him the truth. Why did I not hire you?
He didn't hire me because he said, it doesn't make any sense for me to train you in this tiny little operation, you know, and then have you leave, which was fine. But it was really fortuitous because when Charlie didn't hire me, I went to Zingerman's Bakehouse in Ann Arbor.
Right.
Initially started there working retail because they didn't have any bread openings. And they were fine with my leaving the country and coming back. I went to Kenya that fall for several months and then came back and they took me right back in. And then after a couple of years in retail, I was able to shift over to bread production and then worked another few years there in bread. But we've often remarked just how fortuitous it was that, you know, we met and then he didn't hire me. And then I landed at Zingerman's, which has just been such a tremendous resource. I mean, for me personally, I learned so much working there, both about sales and production and, I mean, just so many things.
Totally. Totally.
And then just the relationships that came out of that. You know, we had, I had two men that I worked with who were good friends, John Sweet, who went on to open Needloff's Breadworks in Chattanooga, which he has since sold. And then Shelby Kibler, who opened Field and Fire, which is a wood-fired brick oven bakery in Grand Rapids. And those have been two really important relationships for us, just friendships and in our baking life.
It's so neat because part of the journey I've been on talking to everybody is you realize these sort of pockets of awesomeness that sort of are the foundation for so many other people, right? And you've got the, that sort of Bay Area, California scene, or where Alan was, and the folks in Vermont. And the folks at Zingerman's, you know, like they hold a place in my heart, even though I've only like visited one time. Right. But, you know, just and for the fact that, that you've got sort of roots in two of those areas, which are quite different and similar at the same time. Right. Like it's a different world, you know, Alan's philosophies and how Zingerman's do things. But in a way, they're complementary because I think they both have heart. Right. So it's so neat that you've got all those experiences to draw from.
They have a particular soul. And, you know, one of the other things that I always, and I think really the heart of sort of where Alan was at, I feel like the brick ovens were, you know, he just used to talk about like cottage industry all the time. Right. And sort of this democratic notion of the materials, the resources, the infrastructure to be available to whomever so that, you know, you can make a living from doing something that is, you know, it involves the community as a whole. And I guess when I say community, I'm talking about everyone from farmers to the millers, to bakers, to the you know, customers, whether those are, you know, retail, wholesale, restaurants, whatever. And he was really on, and you know, at the time I was reading this book called Small is Beautiful, E.F. Schumacher.
Yes. Yep.
And that really had a tremendous influence on us as well, because the notion of, as Wendell Berry likes to talk about as well, like that sort of regenerative economy, not an extractive economy. And Alan was all about that. And so, you know, while his oven has been both a, it's like the magic box, and it really allowed us to get in. You know, when we bought our, I actually bought our property prior to meeting Hildy, because I kind of had this notion in my head that, well, you know, I'm going to, I had come back from California, I'd worked in Wisconsin, I'd wound up back in the Ann Arbor area, and thought, well, I'm here in Ann Arbor, I loved West Michigan for a lot of reasons. The coastline, it's, you know, it's beautiful. The rivers, it's, you know, I love the culture of Ann Arbor, but, I just knew that I wanted to find a piece of property where eventually I and whoever else wanted to hang Hildy, mostly for the better. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's been good. Anyway, it's been hard. It's, you know, no one should fool themselves.
Right.
The simple life is not simple, Mark.
Oh, no.
You know, but anyway, I found this piece of property over on the west side of the state, bought it because I had a few friends who lived in the area who encouraged me to come check out, you know, the spot we are. And we spent really the first 2 years of our marriage, we tore down a barn and harvested the timbers out of it to build our house.
Wow.
We poured the foundation the month.
We did that while I was pregnant with our first.
Oh, really, goodness. Like
my lasting,
that was our
my lasting image
pregnancy
of
project.
That time was pregnant Hildy out in the like frigid cold of this barn, yanking nails out of a
nails out of stuff.
Yeah.
So then we like lived in this little trailer on the back 40 that we had found on the side of the road. And the week that Hildy gave birth to our first child, our son Finn, we poured the foundation for our house. then had actually then Hildy's sister and our brother-in-law came for like 2 months to help us get it framed up. We were able to move into it sort of in the wintertime. We threw like this little cigar box wood stove in it. We used to put our son to bed in like a snowsuit out in our trailer at night. but we were able to get in the house, and then it really took us another, 2 years to get the bakery kind of up and going. I did a little carpentry work. That. Was it
three? Yeah, because our son was born in 2006. Then we had a daughter born in 2008. Oh, yeah. And at that point, we kind of lived just upstairs in our house for the first couple of years while we were trying to get the solar going.
Oh, that's right.
We didn't have any electricity or running water when we got started.
Wow. We're off the grid. Yeah. We're off the grid again, for better or for worse. We've made
Even now you're off the grid.
Still off the grid.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's worked out fairly well. We've had to be a little creative with our energy usage, and refrigeration of course is challenging, but we've made it work with, we retard all our doughs.
Right.
So we just retard all of them in like a chest freezer, or a couple chest freezers that we turned into refrigerators with an external thermostat. So we don't have like a big walk-in or anything. And it takes a little bit of, logistical gymnastics, but we've made it work. Anyway, then in 2010, we finished, the structure of the bakery. We built the oven. We like finished it, which I wouldn't recommend, like in the middle of a February Michigan winter.
It's not good.
Yeah, running just heat at the oven all day. But anyway, it worked out. It hasn't fallen apart, but it's going to get time to rebuild it here pretty quick.
It's funny how I'm assuming it's a very romantic story in hindsight.
You know?
Yeah, I look back fondly at all the days I was close to tears, you know.
You know it, right? The long days, the days that seem, it's like you're about to leave the bakery, but it's like, oh, but there's this one more thing.
Yeah.
And then like its tentacles won't let you go.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get it. I totally get it. You think, oh, just one more. And then it's time to go back in, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that said, for us, like, even in those times, I can't complain because our commute has been short.
To the bakery. Long everywhere else.
They're long days. They're long days at the market. Bake. We've got a particular rhythm to our baking schedule that maybe Hildy could describe, but it all sort of, our week is like a crescendo. Mm-hmm. It starts out with, you know, like, book an office work on Monday, Tuesday, ingredients, what have you. We have someone in the bakery today who works with us, who's doing like some prep for, cookies and, just chopping stuff. And yep. By the time, and then we'll make a schedule, and tomorrow I'll be in there weighing out ingredients and what have you. And then shaping doughs that we'll bake off Thursday morning. And then we'll make more doughs Thursday to bake off Friday morning. And then I guess I was going to let you talk about our schedule. I've had a couple cups of coffee now, Mark. I'm a dangerous man.
There's something going on in the bakery the whole week, Monday through Saturday, in the actual bake space. You know, sometimes it's us in there. Sometimes it's Mandy, who's working with us right now. Sometimes it's our daughter. She's been helping with cookie shaping for a while.
Right.
But it's pretty much a six day a week gig in various capacities.
Totally. Yeah. Well, then Hildy, and is your main outlet the market in Muskegon then? Like, I know you're in other places, but is that sort of what you build towards?
That's our main retail outlet. Okay. And we also do a smaller market called the Sweetwater Local Foods Market that's based at a hospital parking lot south of Muskegon. We used to do the Grand Haven Market, but we stopped that when the pandemic got rolling, because we picked up some additional wholesale. So right now we just took on an 8th wholesale customer. We've got, you know, grocery stores, health food stores, coffee shops. We have a really great relationship with Aldea Coffee, which started right next to us at the farmer's market. Was it our first year or second year that they were there?
I think it was our second year.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the owners of that, Andrew Boyd and Jeremy Miller, are really good friends of ours. And so as their coffee business has grown, They kind of picked up our pastries early on, and they've become a great, just a great outlet. And we just love them so much. And what they're a B Corp, and they're just fabulous. Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things that I was curious about was with the wholesale customers, with the range of products that you do, are they taking bread, or are they taking pastries, or are they, or a bit of both?
Some of both. I mean, we have some places that are just bread and granola. Some places that are just pastries. Trying to think who's, some places have some of both. Not many though, actually. Most of them, it's one or the other. You know, if it's a coffee shop, they want pastries. We have one coffee shop that carries a few scones and bread, I guess two. So it's a range.
I was just curious, just because in our experience in Regina, that, you know, I was making bread of the style that you do, you know, maybe not exactly the same, but it's like, from a retail perspective, folks were all over it. And from a wholesale perspective, it was much more, you know, I just really want buns. You know, I just, it was like, well, what would I do with the ends of that batard if I wanted to make sandwiches and that kind of stuff that everybody wanted, you know, square and that kind of thing.
When did you start your operation? When were you in business?
We opened Orange Boot in 2011, January of 2011.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, and ran it there for 5 years. And then I went, after we closed the retail bakery, I went back to, my Alan Scott oven in the backyard. I did three years of just baking just for our regular customers at the shop.
Yeah.
You know, that would come and pick it up. Right. You know,
we're curious to hear a little bit about your experience. Can we ask you?
Well, so we don't have any concrete plans, but we've often over the years, you know, and we've been really fortunate. We've got a really great customer base in the Muskegon area. And, you know, there's a little overlap, Mark. I mean, some of our customers now, if they don't make it to the farmer's market, they'll go to like one of the grocery stores.
Right.
And vice versa. And then the other, well, you start a business, right? And it seems like that first year is like gangbusters. People are curious. It's like they're buying your stuff. The real challenge is, as you know, over time, maintaining that interest.
Sure.
So we found that just like little tweaks to what we do, either like, you know, new stuff, product development, which is always challenging, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even think like product development like alone can maintain like a long haul. What we were able to tap into a little bit was after our first 3 years at the farmer's market and picking up a couple wholesale accounts, the farmer's market in Muskegon changed locations to downtown, like a brand new, beautiful farmer's market. And so we were able to tap into that a little bit.
Yeah.
We were very lucky in that sense because it generated a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. And then after another 3 years, we did this crazy thing and we started selling grilled sandwiches at the market. So we had this little 10x10 tent and we have a case that we set up in the front in which we stock all of our bread unpackaged so people can kind of see it. Mm-hmm. And it creates, you know, kind of like, hey, I'm walking into a bakery and
sure. Yeah.
I remember seeing, I think it's Bread Alone in New York. I remember seeing they had a setup that really inspired me.
Yeah.
Like in the early 90s, I like went to a market with a friend who lived in like Millbrook, New York. And I think I can't remember if it was Woodstock or wherever. Anyway, went to that market and they had like all this naked bread in this case. And I was like, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's what we do. But in the back of that then, we have like 10 feet space and we set up like this flat top grill with a 6 foot like
prep table.
And then we had a fridge in the middle of it for like cheese and, you know, what have you.
And then we crammed five of us in there.
And yeah. And so we pulled it off. It was, again, it was sort of like, you know, spatial logistics or gymnastics.
It worked all right though.
But it worked out and it, you know, and it just, so my original point was going to be, we've been very fortunate in that like our business has grown little by little by little by little over the years through word of mouth, through a little bit of not reinvention, but tweaking some things.
Yeah.
And then of course we did that for like 4 years, the pandemic hit and like, you know, killed that.
Yeah.
And we've chosen not to take it back on.
Cause A, it was partially insane. And B, I mean, it just made Saturdays extremely long and it really created more work for Hildy because she was hunting down you know, other ingredients, stuff that we were.
It was just, it was a lot.
So all that said, we've wrestled with the notion of brick and mortar.
Right.
Right.
Over the years. And I think we've got some ideas that would allow it to be successful, but I also know it's a 24/7 thing and you've been there, right?
Yeah.
So this is our public therapy session. All right.
Well, yeah. Like, in it, I don't know. There are folks that run very successful brick and mortar pastry shop, bakery, cafe kind of thing. There were so many folks after or during COVID and after COVID that changed things up. And what they realized is that they had their fingers in so many different things than they were as owners, and they were exhausted. And now we are forced to reduce because we can't have all the staff that we have. And so we got to make some choices. And they realized there were a lot of things that weren't bringing them joy.
Right.
And had only very incremental gains. Right.
Yep.
You know, and so they let those go. You know, and I remember I talking to folks in, I think it was in Portland, and I can't remember, it was one product line that I was, I had talked to them and then came back after COVID, and I reached out to them again and I said, hey, how's COVID affecting you? We did a second show kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And she said, I can't remember what she dropped, but she said, I dropped it and I've never felt better. You know, it's like, I never liked doing it and I didn't I thought I had to do it. And now I'm not doing it anymore. So kind of said, I'm going to recalibrate based on what really works and what's bringing me joy. And I'm just going to focus on those two things and probably cheating towards the what brings me joy, you know? Yeah. And I remember I'm talking to another woman in Oregon, and we were at her bakery, it was on Zoom, but she was actually in the front of house at her shop. And she said, you know, I feel a little bit guilty because I'm using paper plates and stuff now, but I was so sick of washing dishes, and I had so much of my operation and hiring and stuff was around getting the plates cleaned to get back out there, that it's like, I don't know that I want to go back and do that again, you know?
And that was like Saturday nights for us. We'd get back after this butt kicking day. And then we'd have because we used plastic boats to serve our sandwiches in, you know? And so we were faced with, you know, a lot of cleanup. And so I think, like, go ahead.
Oh, and I think it's not as like with that particular one, it's not as easy as saying, well, I'm just going to chuck everything out, because there's impacts on that. But it is that thing that says, and so when I talk with folks that are not near as experienced as you, that are just like starting out, they kind of caught the bug during COVID and now, okay, I'm going to go do this thing. Right. And I try and get my inner Alan back and say, okay, what is the thing that you really love to do? And if it's the craft of baking, awesome. Why are you leasing a building and hiring 14 people and doing all of that stuff when you really like baking? Or put your Zingerman's hat on and say, okay, I'm building this machine with people and ingredient inputs and good stuff out, and I can make this business work, and that tinkering with the machine brings me joy. Awesome. Well, then you go do it. Right. And so and that's where, you know, you asked about my Orange Boot experience, and it's like, I was firmly wedged on the fence between, I want to be so awesome at the craft of baking, or I want to tinker with this machine. And I kept on going back and forth and it didn't work. And so when I went back to the backyard, it was sort of like, my attitude was, I'm good enough at the craft that I can make good bread for these people. So let's just have fun with these people, you know, with my sort of restricted little list of people. And that's, so I found joy in that. And so that was kind of the thing.
Well, it's one of those externalities, Mark. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Not only your joy, but the joy that you bring your community, no matter like if that's a small community or it's a bigger community. I mean, there are so many variables in trying to kind of decipher what direction to go. And you look at a place like Zingerman's in Ann Arbor. I mean, you know, there's a university towns sort of breed curiosity, right?
Yes. Yep.
In a particular way.
Yep.
And so I think a place like Ann Arbor is absolutely ripe for something like that. What we've been able to do, and I feel like part of why we've been able to do what we've done for as long as we have, is because we've focused on that at which we're, you know, capable, good. Mm-hmm. We've become, you know, good. And we've had low overhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our overhead has been super low. And that's thanks to, again, you know, Alan and his vision of, you know, keeping it small. Our friends, Jan and Gerard, the people I mentioned earlier, the previous owners of the Pleasanton Bakery up near Traverse City, they're such a dynamic duo, but they always used to laugh about how, and this is, I don't, you know, we're here in the States, but the American way is always sort of biggering.
Yes.
You know, to borrow maybe a word from Dr. Seuss, but this notion of biggering all the time, just to, I don't know, I think usurps that notion of like, okay, let's keep this small and try to maintain the joy.
Yeah.
The phone.
Yeah, white no shirt. Problem. That's a good ringtone.
It drives me crazy. I mean, I think the place where we are with our business, and this has been our conversations more of late, like we've been at it. This is our 14th market season.
Yeah.
You know, we were both baking before. This hasn't been the case so much for Charlie, but like for my body, the toll that production is taking is hard, you know?
Yeah. And yes.
So I'm asking myself questions. I mean, we're asking them together of like, okay, well, what am I passionate about within the business? Where do my strengths and skills lie? What can we do that's not going to continue to tear apart my shoulders?
Yep.
And so there's a lot, you know, that we're trying to.
But those are good questions. I would suggest those are the right questions, because biggering is just by default, it's better. And the flip right. side is like, I want to get this new thing out of it, or I want to do what I'm doing, but in a different way, so your shoulders aren't messed up, or what have you. And then when you're testing out a new model, it's like, then you can be very clear, like, will this actually give me those things that I really want? Right?
Where's the sweet spot? Where's the balance? You know, I mean, it's like, Mark, bread is a metaphor for all of life, right? I mean, all these variables, some of which you can control and some not so much. And then there's, you know, there's a little bit of mystery involved. It's like, I've taken all these ingredients, you know, whether it's your ability, your body, and then all of a sudden curveballs. It's like baking. You've taken all this, like, not to wax too philosophically, but like you've taken this flour, you've taken these very simple elements, and temperature, which is so important. Mm-hmm. You know, I think over the years, like temperature is just something that I take closer note of more and more than I think what I used to in our earlier days. And it has bred, you know, better results.
Yeah.
But we all have these particular spaces in which we work. Mm-hmm. All these spaces have their own personalities. And whether that's the bacteria or yeasts that are inherent in that spot or in the flour using on our hands, whatever, and goes into this thing that, you know, is you've imparted, you know, part of your personality into it, it has its own personality. And then certainly in the bakery, a bake schedule, right?
Yeah.
You've got, maybe you've got a steam injected deck oven. Maybe you don't have access to the coolers that you need. So you try to figure out, okay, well, how is this all going to flow? And in our case, you know, with we've tweaked our refrigeration a little bit. We've got a couple doughs that are kind of what I guess I'd call straight doughs. So in other words, they get a 3-4 hour bulk fermentation. They get shaped and then they go into the oven after a 2.5 hour proof, something right. like that.
Yep.
And those loaves are loaves that are, they're a little stiffer, and they would not do well at a higher temperature, you know, which is what we're dealing with in Allen's oven, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Because yeah. we get about eight oven loads out of a firing.
Right.
And Allen was, this is a funny, like little anecdote. Allen was horrified.
Yeah.
By how hot, like people were starting to like heat his ovens. He was yeah. horrified. He was like, yeah. oh, I just never, and he was Australian, right?
Yeah.
He's like, ah, oh, I never imagined people would use my ovens like this. But we've used it like that now, and it's, you know, it's a little worse for the wear, but it's, you know, it's held up well enough.
Yeah.
So anyway, you've got that variable of this oven that is descending in temperature. We put our really light, looser doughs with a lot of steam up front early on, and then those stiffer doughs that we mix day of go in the final oven loads. So it's like you're taking all this, and then what do you do with the heat after that? You've got all this heat. You don't want to waste it. So then we do cookies.
We bake off cookies.
Right, which we shape earlier in the week. And then finally, poor Mandy, and a lot of times our daughter Annie will cut scones for about
a long time.
Yeah.
we bake oven loads of cookies. So we do the 8 oven loads of bread. Then we do like 3 or 4 oven loads of cookies. Uh-huh. Then we refire the oven. We do
just to get a surface fire. It's crazy.
And just soak a little more heat in there. And then we bake another 4 oven loads of bread.
Wow.
Holy baguettes at night. Baguettes are the most maddening loaf. Mark, if you can tell me, like, is there a loaf that takes longer to develop than the baguette? I don't know. Maybe I'm just dumb or something, well, but I mean, my goodness.
There's that
rhythm based on all of those variables again is like,
let's talk about oven efficiency, right? How many can you get in there? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Or like it's nuts. Yeah. I used to hate it. Like even with my deck oven, I said like, you know, I could get 18 proper loaves of bread in there and sell them for $6 each, like on a deck. Right.
Yeah. I know.
And I could get maybe, you know, what, 9 baguettes and sell them for $3 each. And I said, I don't understand the math here.
They're almost like a loss leader though, in some regards.
It's almost, but because they're so darn beautiful and.
Well,
and
sometimes they're footballs.
Yeah.
And I hate it.
And then you get your, but I think it's one of those things that it helps your customers tell that story to themselves about how awesome this is. Right. It's like it's tapping into some romance memory of something they've seen, you know, because we didn't sell a lot of baguettes at our place, but boy, they look nice, you know.
Yeah,
like we sold our share.
The case with all those loaves, I mean, they all, again, and this gets back to storytelling.
Yeah,
and that's what Zingerman's does so well.
Oh yeah,
if Zingerman's does nothing else well, and they do a lot of things well. They present a really great story. They do. They tell great stories. Like you tell great stories, right? And I think, and that's why they have developed this concept of like a third place, right?
Yep.
Is come in. We've got a story to tell, and you can, and other people have stories to tell. So, and it's bread is like encapsulates all of that.
And see, though, that is now the something in the positive column for the brick and mortar and the right community when you like the people in the neighborhood, because then every holiday you can think of, every, whether it's real or manufactured, you can do something cool. You know, it's like, heck, we, you know, Cindy would make a t-shirt shaped sugar cookies and we would decorate it up for the World Cup, and whoever was playing that day, we would decorate in their team colors, you know, and it made, everyone happy, and three people knew why, like they made the connection, you know, and we were doing it for ourselves. So those were kind of things that made it awesome, you know, but the thing that changes and there's no judgment on it, good or bad, is all of that scheduling that you talked about now involves, other people, you know, and there's a whole task called, let's continue to recruit new people to join the team. And also let's make sure that the folks that are there are happy and growing and contributing and stuff. And, you know, and it's like in our experience, in Saskatchewan and at the time, like my buddy Byron reminded me, we weren't the first to ever have a bakery like that in Regina, but we were the only ones doing it at that time. It was like 50 years ago, there was lots of them, but now there was like just us. So you're not recruiting from anywhere, you're training from scratch. And the folks that we hired were brilliant, but they kind of were like, yeah, I'm kind of 3 years is a good time here.
Right,
you know,
right.
when I met folks that, oh, here's my head baker and he's been with us 19 years. I don't understand like what you're saying. Like how does this even happen? Like,
right. You
know, I think I misheard you, you know? And so, which are incredibly interesting challenges,
mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, for folks like you that have got, you know, more than a decade's experience in doing all of the other things. It's like, let someone else take on something that I've already mastered so I can take on a new challenge called hiring a team and serving customers and decorating the shop and all of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that could be thrilling, you know, or it could be like, oh my God, what have we done? It's
right. You're second month in and you're like, oh
yeah.
Yeah. Where are we going with this?
Well, it's interesting. The model we've talked about most, is actually like keeping bread production in our current operation.
Okay. Yeah.
And opening a cafe that would be like pastry production and, you know, sandwich, meat, soup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coffee shop, that kind of thing, which I think for both of us feels a little less like scary in that.
It's not a cut the cord and just jump. You've got,
right.
You're holding on to, here's some things we know. Sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it would be, that's the model we've kind of come back to again and again, as we've talked about it.
Yeah. I used to always have this dream of, that were when I was getting stressed out about, retail rent rates and stuff like lease rates and that, it's like, you know, oh, I'd love to just have a production facility in the light industrial area. And then like a little outlet, you know, the little jewel box thing where folks could come and sit and be happy and stuff. And, but I don't have to pay retail lease rates for my deck oven and my walk-in and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so that's sort of sounds like what you're talking about. And there's so many ways that it can go. And that phrase, it's a little maligned, I guess, about what's in it for me. But I don't think that's a bad question to ask and to be really clear on for everyone. You know, what's the answer for each of you? What's the answer for your crew? What's the answer for your customers? You know, I've talked with a few folks and I've been victim to it myself sometimes, where that rush you get from pleasing people will make you slide into bad decisions. You know, it's like I'm killing myself, or I'm not making any money, you know, I'm not making any money, or I'm not paying things off. But well, those folks were happy today, you know, the people that I'm pleasing. And it's like, if you can, on the one level, it's like, okay, well, I've made enough today that I can do it again tomorrow, and I can do it again tomorrow, and we're on the right path. Or you're just like spinning, and it's like, I'm never going to get out of this cycle. Right.
Don't you think? I think like exit strategy is an important aspect to consider when, you know, entering.
If you've got a window of time, right? Like, you know, like none of us are getting it, you know, we're not 23, right? So you don't
have a
30 year window, you know, and you say like, okay. And I guess, you know, even speaking personally, like I'm kind of in this, oh yeah, I can get really excited about a 3 year project sort of at this phase of my life, right? Or a 1 year project. I don't know if I have a 15 year one or it hasn't hit me yet that says that here's the, you know, you know, in my 50s that it's like, yeah, this is my 15 year next project.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what that is. And some of these things just have that timeline, you know, but
right.
You know, but I don't know, like you mentioned bread alone, and like, you know, I've talked with Dan Leader and his son Nels over the years, right? And it's like, there's two folks that are wired differently, than me, you know, and you know, in a good way, but it's like, they're not afraid of the same things or of the things that I'm afraid of. Cause my fear factor is team building and mm-hmm. recruiting. And it's like finding the people that are as crazy as I am to want to go do this thing. Right. And it's almost this disbelief. Like, why do you want to come work with me? Cause like, I'm doing this crazy thing, you know? And they don't have that problem. And so I admire them for it. They're like, no. Well, like, we have a team and that's the way it goes. Right. And that's just, just part of the, that's as fundamental to what they're building as your refrigeration schedule, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. It's all tricky. You got to figure out the rhythm of the bread, your bake schedule, the community, the, you know, your own personality, your energy level.
But look at you two, right? Like, honest to goodness, most people listening to this are going to be like, they built their own house while living in a trailer and then built an oven and a bake house on the side, you know, using reclaimed wood from a barn they tore down. Like, that's nuts. Like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like that's crazy. And so it's that kind of thing again, you know, it's sort of like, well, I saw you grimace, but it's like, it's that level of adventure again, right? It's that.
I think it is the adventure. I mean, I think there is something of the adventure of it that appeals to me.
What, our whole operation, like the whole thing, like what we've done, or
no, just like thinking about this next season and what, like, there's a part of me that's like, I don't know, there is something appealing to me about the adventure of it. And mm-hmm. like, I remember when Charlie and I were, when we first kind of had moved up here, we were both doing other jobs. He was doing carpentry. I was working on a friend's farm and I had a little cleaning business. Like, we, you know, we were just getting landed. We were building our garden, building our house. And I remember we kept having conversations about the bakery, like,
and what we wanted to do, like specifically.
Really kept talking about it. I mean, that went on for several years.
And so the other thing that we had considered was like small scale agriculture or large, you know, market gardening.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Having an organic farm. And I just remember we got to this point. Well, I remember it was, we watched Into the Wild. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
We watched Into the Wild one night.
Chris McCandless, you know that story?
I don't know.
John Krakauer. I mean, it's triumphant and tragic kind of all at once. But anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, worth checking out. But we had watched that, and it's about one young man's kind of adventure that ends up leading to his death. But it's true story. But I just remember sitting and talking after that and just thinking, saying to one another, if we don't try this, we are always going to regret it. You know, we're always going to wonder. And I kind of feel like that's where I've gotten with the cafe.
What did John say? Do you remember what John Proga, our friend, John, remember that he was visiting with Michelle? He's like, look, man, you've been talking about this for like ever. He's like, either, you know, poop or get off the pot, man.
Well, Bill Bovier said that to us too. Okay. Bill, our friend, Bill Bovier.
Two friends.
Said that.
It's good to have like, friends who are like, man, just shut up and
do it.
but you know, we had the exact same discussion, Cindy and I, right? Like before we opened the retail bakery. Heck, before we went to Karamias to take the workshop with Alan, you know, in 2004, it was because that was like, we're going to take our family vacation because I was working for the phone company and, you know, this year's vacation is going to be go to BC, take this workshop and then camp for a bit. And well, Cindy said to me, Cindy said, like, if you're serious, then we need to do it. Right. And then, you know, when I went to San Francisco in 2008, was the same thing. It was, you know, took almost all our vacation days to go to SFBI to learn some skills. Right. Yep. And then even, you know, when we were going to open, you know, we're playing with graph paper and mapping out what a bakery could look like making the lists. And we're taking pictures of the places that we like, that we would like our place to kind of be like, you know, and all of those things. And it was like, okay, if we're going to do it, we're going to, like, it's now, you know, like, let's go. listening to those voices sometimes are a good thing. You know, it's like just kind of, yeah, I guess if we're going to give it a go, but so, and you give it a go with your eyes open, you know, mm-hmm. Sure. Like even when, you know, we didn't know what the heck we were doing, but you know, we didn't have that experience that you two had of, you know, working in these other bakeries and now we're going to make our own place. And that we had visited a lot of bakeries. And when we decided, well, we're going to open our own place, we got serious about like finding some friends and going to visit them. And yeah, you know, yeah,
I'm curious, what were the spots that kind of gave you the most inspiration? I mean, where did you visit during that time?
So when I was in San Francisco, I remember taking pictures. I took pictures of Tartine, but it was like, that wasn't the place. There was a Rite Aid drugstore and ice cream shop that had sort of the signage and the feeling better than Tartine did for us.
Is that right?
So in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, there's a place, it's called Chrissy's Mayfair Bakery. And that's my friend Tracy and her brother took it over from their parents. So it's been in the family since the 60s. And right from day one, the first time I went in there, I was like, oh, I want our place to be in Regina to be like Tracy's in Saskatoon, because it was this lovely community shop. There was like, it was in the neighborhood. They made really good bread, really good pastries. They named their sandwiches after Italian soccer players because they're an Italian family. So you could get the Maldini, you could get the Gattuso, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just like, no, this is perfect. You know, and there was, whenever we went on a Saturday when we were visiting, because it's, you know, in miles, it's like 125 miles north of Regina, like the other city in Saskatchewan. And we went and it was just like, yeah, this is our place. A couple of seats, a big lineup, a lot of bustle, and then just that wall of bread on the back, right?
It's like living art.
Mm-hmm. And that was the first hearth loaf I'd ever seen at a bakery that I can remember is at her place, right? And so that was really the inspiration for our place. And then Alan was, when we met him, the whole idea about the brick oven, because through the book was like, oh, I could do this to earn my stripes, to get my chops. I could build an oven in the backyard. Mm-hmm. I could bake on the weekends for folks and keep my day job, you know, and that kind of thing. And kind of,
yeah, right.
You know, say the same kind of thing. I got my foot in one and, you know,
yeah, right.
because we had kids at that time, they were in elementary school and,
right.
And it's like, I wasn't about to sell up and move to Edmonton to go work at a bakery, you know, like it just wasn't in the cards for us. So,
right.
But, and then there was another woman, Nancy Rubiliak in Edmonton, who's retired now. And she was working solo. She had like one assistant maybe doing the scaling, and she was doing it all by herself in a very tiny shop with like a one of those British Chandley ovens that was like one deck, you know, like, and that was all it was. Right. And we had heard about her. And so that was an 8-hour drive, but we went up, we drove up and she spent some time with us after she had closed, spent a couple hours and we went out for supper and she kind of showed us how she did things. And so we got our heads around what a really small place could be, you know, and then we ended up somewhere in the middle of Christie's and what Nancy was doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was kind of it. It was sort of like getting over my imposter about reaching out to these folks and say, look, I'm serious. I really want to do this. But they're like, but you have a really good job. Like, are you not? like, they're all like, what do you do?
Do you want to be an impoverished baker?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't understand. Like, I would. Right.
I went that works like all hours of the day and weird hours at night.
Yeah. I went to a guild class. Where I first met Tracy and Nancy, actually. I was at a guild class up in Edmonton, like a bread baker's guild thing. And I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm serious about doing this. And I remember some of the instructors there that were like, the cooking instructors at Nate in Edmonton were like, are you nuts? Like I'd swap in a minute for what you've got. And it's like, oh, I don't know, but I really want to do this thing. Like, this is just the thing I want to do. So,
Are you still glad you did?
Oh God. Yeah. Oh, it was the best thing we ever did. Like it was so difficult and we were out of our depth and then we then we climbed up and we figured it out and we figured it out. But you said I'm a storyteller. We made some real memories at that place. And it was only 5 years that we were open, but memories with employees that still to this day are reaching out and checking in with our customers that, that became friends with ourselves, with our kids that were working in the shop, like all of it, like as hard as it was. And there were frustrating times, like, you know, a baker quits on the 10th of December.
You just want to
end it, right? But you know, that kind of stuff. But hey, like, what a life experience, right? And worth more than another 5 years in the cubicle at SAS. Well, that's for sure.
And you know, Mark, I think that's a great point. And really, for me, that was one of the unexpected joys of starting that business. And it, you know, became evident immediately. But
our baking business.
Was the, you know, you go to the market and all of a sudden, you know, you get people who are curious and they come up and then they come back the next week. And then pretty soon, like there are folks to whom we've been selling bread literally from the get-go. In fact, our first customer, a guy by the name of Eric, I remember, and he still buys bread from us to this day. And many of them have become really dear friends. There happens to be one of our really good friends that used to buy ginger scones from us. She works at the stand with us on Saturdays.
She's been with us over 10 years.
She's been with us for 10 years.
She's become like family to us.
Yep.
Cindy.
Yeah. And so you talked about recruiting too. Most of the people, I would say, who have worked for us, at least at the market, and then when we were doing sandwiches, were all customer of ours from our, initially.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've had, I'm trying to think of like in our, typically like we've, over the years, we have one almost full-time person in the bakery. And then, you know, and our kids kind of fill in here and there if need be. And then we know enough former sort of employees that if we really get in a pinch, we can call somebody and be like, hey, can you come up and help us shape cookies for Friday afternoon or something,
bail us out for an afternoon.
Whatever. But that has been I think one of the unexpected joys for me is developing, as you said, those really good friendships, and then also a pool from whom, you know, you can recruit at the very least to, you know, work a market stall where, you know, where other people know other people, members of the community, and then it becomes word of mouth and it kind of grows on itself from there. It's been, you know, bakeries breed sort of this a different community because people are always looking for that. I don't know. Want to add anything to that?
No, I would concur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and just hearing that glimpse of excitement from Hildy when she talks about the cafe idea, you know, kind of opening up. It sounds like you've got some ideas about what you might want to do in that.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. And you also know? I think like our daughter, Annie, is of an age. She is now 14. So she's going to be in high school here next year, but Annie has a really great aesthetic and she's a very, like, she's a super hard worker. It's like, you don't have to ask her to do, and she does it before, you know, she's just one of those people. Right. She has very high intelligence in that regard. And so what did she say to us? What did she say to you? What did you just tell me this morning that she said to us?
Oh, so last week, Charlie and I had done some visioning on sort of different, you know, different directions we could go with the bakery in the next season.
Yeah.
And
then we just wanted to take a look at the next decade. What do we want that to look like from the standpoint of like our family, our personal lives, our business, our friendships?
Anyway. Yeah. So we did the visioning kind of Zingerman style, which is you imagine, you know, that mm-hmm. you've already achieved it and you're kind of looking back, you know, so we did it like 5 years out, mm-hmm. you know, as if we had taken this path or had taken that path. And so then we had shared those with our kids this week. And Annie is very excited about the prospect of the cafe. And she said, you know, well, Mom, you only get one life. You might as well do something really interesting. I mean, you might as well go for it.
So Mark, like you, we're just going to exploit our children to like become successful.
Yes. Yeah. And they already know, like, you know, we will eventually come back and live with you. Like, that's just the way it's going to be. So,
more garden help.
Yeah, that's right.
You want to eat? So
yeah. But what a great way of doing it, and what a great way of, I love just, you know, sharing it back, and cause your kids are, who knows you better, right? Like they're, what a good mirror right. to kind of hold that stuff up to. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's been a fun run.
Yeah.
For the most, I mean, you know, been fun, hard, all of it.
Oh yeah.
But it's been so rewarding. And I really, you know, I think about like, so many other, I'm so grateful to been able to have met the people that we've met,
mm-hmm.
tapped into something at four. I mean, how many people can say, I don't know, maybe more than you'd think, but it's all of a sudden, it's like you tap into this thing and you just love it. And then all of a sudden you make it into your life and your work. I mean, I feel so grateful to have stumbled upon the people I did, mm-hmm. and had access to people who were both had a great sense of aesthetic. I had great virtue, like were, you know, and we and a great ethic, great values, and really want to see like supporting a organic agriculture, you know, responsible farm practices. And to be able to like tap into those things and then into like a regenerative economy on top of, you know, creating something that both you and us were like, wow, what is that? That loaf that's so beautiful and nourishing and then develops, you know, creates community.
Yeah.
After you figure out like all the variables and how to make it all come together.
It's interesting to me to think about, I've done a lot of reflecting lately on how significant it was for me to work at Zingerman's when I did, that I spent almost 5 years there. And it was really transformative.
Yeah.
I mean, in that I came away from that time thinking, wow, I'm actually like, so that when Charlie and I kind of reconnected later and he was like, yeah, I'm thinking about opening a bakery. I was like, yeah, like, we can do this, you know.
Yes.
She was just in it for the canoe, Mark. I had a canoe. She just wanted, was just in it for the canoe.
That's true.
Anyway, sorry.
Sorry. So, but I think a lot, okay, so here I am. Here we are in this season of life. I'm 45, Charlie's 55, and I'm thinking a lot about creating meaningful places to work for younger people.
And safe places to work.
Yeah.
Like safe and meaningful with like good work. And I think for me, in some ways, the thought of a cafe is like, we have this whole set of skills and values to share that are beautiful and powerful and people need access to them, people need really dynamic, beautiful places to work and dynamic food communities to be a part of.
Right. And like, how do you give that experience to young folks where you live? Like you had at Zingerman's, right?
Yeah.
You know, like that. Absolutely. It's huge. And then like layer on top of that, the feeling that your customers already have for you through the farmer's market, and you get to see that once a week, right? Now you're building a place for a group of people that they're going to connect with as well, right? And that's a Like, that's a lovely thing. Like, you know, after we closed Orange Boot, it was kind of then when I really realized what an impact we'd had and sort of an effect that we'd had on folks and that kind of a thing. And like, it's huge as well. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of upsides for sure.
Now we should have this conversation again in 3 years.
Okay.
And Charlie and I might still be sitting here going, yeah, Mark, we're still thinking about
that. No. I'll be checking in before then.
But we've literally been having this conversation for probably 7 years.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, we literally just keep circling back to it, but maybe it's just been waiting for the time to be ripe.
But our kids
to be old enough.
Yeah, our kids are also really little, you know. And it's hard to, like, I give you a lot of credit for tackling a project like that when you've got, you know, little kids. It's
when we built the oven and stuff, they were small. Yeah, like they were. There's a picture. I'll have to dig it up and post it one day of our daughter Robin in the mud. With the oven building workshop and stuff, she would have been seven, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But by the time we opened Orange Boot, they were old enough to work in the bakery. So which was kind of part of it, right? Because that whole experience that you talked about, Hildy, because, you know, my dad was an auto mechanic, and he opened up, mom and dad opened up a Texaco service station, or took over a Texaco franchise when I was in high school, and my sister and I both worked in it. And there were days that I hated it, but I had money in my pocket, you know, and I had a job. And you'll go 30 years in the future when we opened up Orange Boot Bakery. And it was like, I was remembering a lot of the things that I learned at the Texaco about customer service and stuff. Right. So like that's our kids have a ton of skills that they learned. Skills that are, you know, that they can take into any career, you know, that they picked up at the bakery, and dealing with those personality differences and that kind of stuff that you come up when you work with a group of people, and you can do that in a safe space, like you said, Hildy, like that's a great space to learn those things, you know. Well, I wish you well. I think we need to stay in touch though, because I'll give you I'll put it in my calendar in a few months to say, so have you done it yet? Or send me a picture of the location, or, you know, like whatever it happens to be. Right. But,
sure.
Yeah, no, it's just
one way or the other. If it's still our booth at the Vegan Farmers Market, we'll send you that picture.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Some dilapidated old building that we're trying to renovate. We'll send you that picture.
Thank you for sharing your story, because I think that there's, at every stage of your journey, from the working independently to building out your shop now, and all to thinking about the next thing that you want to do, then the next thing that gets you excited, like there's just so much inspiration for folks that are at all different stages of their own baking journey. And I just really appreciate you just being so awesome and sharing your story with us. Has just been great. And it's
thanks,
nice, Mark, to meet.
Thanks for your work. You're a real gift. And thanks, you know, for being a conduit for all of us to tell our stories.
Really right on.
We do.
Right on.
Tremendous.
Wow. That was fun. Hey, I felt such a connection to Hildy and Charlie. I really did. I'm sure it came across. But right from the first minute we were talking, it was like, oh, I don't know you, but I really, really like you. And we just had so much in common. So it was a lot of fun. I was making notes as I was listening to it again. Charlie early on said that you know, we're beyond wealthy from the experiences we have. And boy, I believe that very much so. Both the experiences that they've had in life and in baking and in serving a community, the experiences that I had doing the same things, and the experiences that I get to have with the podcast and having these conversations with folks, wealthy beyond measure. I really, really feel that. The other thing that I wrote down just when we were talking about Hildy's dream for this cafe and what they want to do and all the reasons why she thinks it's important. But it's like they've got a good thing going, and do you want to make the change and all of that? And what I wrote down was, you can't see the end before you leap. And that's another thing that I believe, and I have to remind myself of quite often, is that, you know, you're going down a path and you can see a light down at the end of the path, but you can't see the end of it. That's just life. And sometimes you just have to see as much of the path as you can and then make a leap and head down there. And I think that's where they're going with this cafe idea and with sort of the next adventure with Laughing Tree Bakery. And that's pretty cool. I'm excited for them, no matter what they decide. But I feel good about the process that they describe that they're going through to make the decision. So even though at the end, there's going to be a leap involved, they're doing some good work. And it's a bit of a privilege that I have that I can share that with you. Maybe there's something in their planning and their dreaming and their visioning that you can take and grab hold of and apply to your project. That's pretty cool. That's pretty neat that you can do that through the miracle and the mystery that is like podcasts and recordings and all of that stuff. I got to get going. You got to get going. You've got baking to do. I've got to go buy peanut butter. So I'm going to sign off. It's been great talking with you again. Until next time, when I've got another conversation, work hard, bake lots, stay safe, stay healthy. Give your friend a hug. Happy baking. Bye-bye.